swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
Welcome back to Disgusting Baseball. This is episode 210. I am your host, Matt Lyons. And on this week's episode, we got some meatballs. We're going to talk about Ahmed Rosario, Gabriel Reyes, Tyler Friedman, Brian Rocchio conundrum. Talk about Tanner Bibee's starts, his first three starts. Two were impressive. One was less than impressive. And answer some of your questions. Join me for all that and more. Another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how are you doing?
Man, you got to wind down the enthusiasm a little bit, man. You're coming in too hot.
I'm a little too excited about this team right now, man, as we record it.
I'm great, though. I lost 5 pounds very abruptly over the course of 36 hours. So I got that going for me. And, living the dream. Just watching baseball, not really caring about outcomes anymore because who cares? It's just a sport. You know what? That's my new approach to this entire season and this team in general, honestly. It's just fun to watch the ball go around. I'm really approaching it from a very stupid pathway, but, you know.
Who cares? It's all meaningless. Eat Arby's. That's what it is.
We're
all
exactly. In it. There you go. You know what?
The sun will consume us all one day or another. Who cares?
I've long embraced this sort of cheer-filled nihilism, and it really helps with being a Cleveland Guardians fan sometimes.
It's kind of necessary.
Yeah.
Do you know what else is? I want to go with necessary. Do you know what else is necessary, Mary?
They are necessary. Go on. Yes.
Meatballs, of course, are necessary. Meatballs are fun little tidbits of the Guardians over the last week. I guess they're not always fun. We got some moldy meatballs.
It's kind of a bummer one.
Nasty. You got a bummer meatball over there, Merritt?
No, mine's fun.
Yeah, okay.
Mine's fun and funny.
I'll go first this week since I actually have one. Mine is about our beautiful boy, Cal Quantrill, who's struggled this year. And in a couple of games, he's looked really good. And on Sunday, he had a no-hitter for like 7 innings, which was kind of amazing. It's not, I don't want to talk specifically about that. It's about one thing specifically in that game, which was a splitter. Zach Mizell in the offseason for The Athletic reported that Cal was working on some new stuff with his pitching, including the shape of his curveball and a new splitter to get swings and misses. Obviously, if you've watched Cal Quantrill starts or taken a glance at his Fangraphs page, the swings and misses have not come. That has not been an outcome of working on a splitter, but he does have it, and it's kind of a weird, interesting little pitch. He hasn't thrown it a whole lot, only 24 times, and 11 of those came last night. But it's a pitch where he has the one thing that's kind of special about it or weird is that it has such a low, first of all, low spin rate, which is one of the lowest for any splitters in the league. And it also has a 96% active spin, which means it's not spinning much, but the spin that it gets is doing a lot of work for it, which for anybody who doesn't know what active spin is, the MLB glossary, if you just Google it, it's like the first result as probably the best, I think, very concise definition. It's basically, if you think of a football, like when you throw a football as a spiral, the way you're spinning it is specifically so the spin does not affect where it's going. That's inactive spin. You're spinning it like a football. It's what sliders do. It's that whole how you see the dot on the ball. But that kind of motion when you're throwing, so the ball just goes straight as a dart, that would be 100% inactive spin. So think of Quantrill's ball as the opposite of that because it's 96% active spin. So the way his is spinning, like if you threw the football and spun it the opposite way, it would spin differently and it would generate movement. That's basically what Cal Quantrill's trying to do with his splitter. It's also weird that it hasn't resulted in a ton of movement. It's the ride and depth of his splitter is not fantastic by any means, by any stretch. You would think that being that it's like so low RPM, it's only a little over 1,000 rotations per minute, which is crazy for an MLB pitch, especially a splitter, but it doesn't move a whole lot. And I just want to see what he does with the thing. New pitches are always exciting anyway. And splitters are one that like everybody has now. Everybody's trying to find the right way to do it. Like Trevor Stephan has one that's really good. And we face some guys who've had good ones. So I just want to see what he does with it. Even like Aaron Civale, his splitter is the opposite. It spins like crazy and it has less active spin. So I'm really interested to see what both Cal Quantrill and what the Guardians are doing with these splitters that they're working on and why some of the guys are so different. And I don't know. I just like Cal Quantrill. I like the big 98 mile per hour guys, but I also like the guys who come up like Quantrill who just sort of like a Josh Tomlin who will just consistently pitch and not be too terrible that he sticks in rotation, but also not be bad enough to be like Zach, please Zach, and get kicked off the back to AAA. But I think he's saving it for like last night. He went really deep into the game because he had a no hitter going for so long. He got deep into the third time through the order. I think when that happens, he's sort of specifically saving it for that point. Just has another pitch to change up the timing of the batters. And I can't wait to see him use it more, which I think will be fun.
I was thinking about that, right? Because like spin is where movement comes from. And we like guys to be somewhere on one of the two bands, right? Like you want a really high spin or really low spin. because obviously the pitch that spins the least is not knuckleball. Ideally, it spins no times as it goes to the plate. And it moves like a wiffle ball in so many different ways. I wonder if this is kind of me idly thinking. I don't really know enough about the physics of the baseball. I've always been meaning to look into this about low spin pitches. I wonder if the reason it's not reading on StatCast as being like lots of movement is because it doesn't have any discernible one direction. You know, a slider slides in a very specific direction, or your typical changeup, similar thing, curveball, whatever. I wonder if because it's so low spin, maybe that's affecting its ability to have a consistent movement. I don't know. I'm just kind of, this is kind of something I'm spitballing, thinking out loud about. But that is amazing about the 96% accurate spin. I'd love to find out what other pitchers have, not so much similar spin rates, but similar, like whatever his RPM is, 1,200, 1,500, whatever it is, but 96% of that is active. What other people have that much active, raw active spin, right? That many RPMs compared to what their overall spin is, if that makes sense. But yeah, I was just kind of thinking, like, you know, because like if his pitch doesn't, your typical splitter goes almost straight down. I wonder if his waffles a little bit, or if it just kind of floats a bit more, because obviously what he throws is a lot of pitches that go down. Sinkers and things of that nature. I wonder if he's just trying to find another thing in a similar plane, but slower, with maybe an extra little kind of fidget to it, so to speak, to kind of figure this out. I don't know. It's neat also, to your point, to see a guy continue to evolve his craft. Like, we just, I don't know how to cast aspersions here, but we just saw someone get DFA'd who just seemed to have completely calcified as a pitcher their rookie year, and now they're not on the team anymore. They've been sent back to AAA. Whereas Quantrill, who is... when you look at the type of pitcher he is, you're like, this is an anachronism pitcher, right? A sinker baller who doesn't get strikeouts, who relies on the ground ball and pitching into his defense. And he's just like, you know, I'm going to add this other pitch. It's going to make me even better. Or hopefully allow me to stick and keep people off my kind of thing. So I don't know. It's cool to see, like you said. It's very in vogue. A lot of splitters within the organization now. I wonder if this is their version of the Tampa Bay Rays changeup from a little while back. But...
yeah, I don't think it's working quite as well as theirs was, unfortunately. Like, I think Stephens is I think it's probably been worse this year just because Stephen hasn't been quite as good. But, like, I think Nick Sandlin throw a splitter too, and his – obviously he hasn't been good. Aaron Savali's is not great, even though he developed one. So I think you're right. I think it's something they're doing. It's just not
– I feel like there's not working yet. Common denominator here that the catching's been terrible too. So I don't know. just throwing an idea out there, you know. I don't know.
I mean, Cal Quantrill went 7 no-hit innings with Cam Gallagher behind the plate, not Mike Zunino. I don't know if that means anything or not.
What's Cam Gallagher good at? Not hitting. What's he there for then? Well, great question. Thanks for asking. That's odd.
It's a real shame they don't have a catching prospect who's really good behind the plate, athletic, and absolutely tearing the cover off the ball in AAA. That's a shame. So what's your meatball this week, Matt?
Do you know who had the hardest hit baseball while wearing a Cleveland Guardians jersey last week?
Probably Stephen Kwan.
Wrong. It's Ahmed Rosario, 107.7 miles an hour. What did that ball do? That's a ground out, Matt. Thanks for asking. What's funny is, you know who had the second hardest hit ball in a Cleveland Guardians uniform last week?
Was that another Ahmed Rosario ground out?
Wrong, jerk. It's a single from Gabriel Arias. 107.4 miles an hour. What's doubly interesting is Arias, the first time he started at shortstop, I think all year. I could be wrong on that, but it seems like all year, and it just seems wrong. But anyway, he also had the second hardest hit ball in that game. A double, 104 miles an hour off the bat. All in all, he was in toto, probably the hardest hittingest player to wear a Cleveland Guardians jersey over the last 7 days. What does this say? I don't know.
Nothing good, especially the fact that he had like that was his only start probably.
I know he has like 5 at bats all week. he's the hardest hit. He hit the crap out of the ball every single time. Like, that's fine. I wouldn't worry too much about it. Even his ground out was harder than Ahmed Rosario's average bat exit velocity.
I mean, at least we got another home run tonight from Jose Ramirez, and I think Ahmed got a hit like in the first inning. He was on base and didn't. Yeah, I think he got a hit. He moved Stephen Kwan over, so.
It's starting to warm up. You know, the boys are starting to knock the rust off. Blah, 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 blah.
I just want some slap hits. That's all. I want to see it sustained through a whole game. I think the last two, like the first inning was kind of good, and then it faded immediately. And then You lose against Detroit when you do that. That's what happens.
Yeah, exactly. You can't let bad teams hang around. And you know what? This time around, Detroit did not let the Guardians hang around. So there you go. They're going to win the game. Good for them. Anyway, Amed Rosario should be benched. Go on. Move on. Go on. What did you have to say?
No, that is actually that's a perfect segue to first main topic, which is
it this way.
Let me look at the notes here. Amed Rosario should be benched, is what it says.
Oh, curious.
No, I mean today they're working out Gabriel Arias in right field, and I think it's just. I mean, I get it if they want to keep Amed Rosario and Gabriel Arias. If they feel in the deepest pits of their heart that both of them need every day at bats, the idea that Gabriel Arias has to work around every position while Amed Rosario hasn't this iron grip on shortstop is just bizarre to me. Rosario, he's not going to be around this year. I mean, I know they talked about in the offseason they were totally definitely extending an extension offer to him. That was definitely wink, wink, a thing they were doing. But
here's a dollar.
there's no chance he's coming back. I mean, they have just looking at it now, it's at the very absolute least, you have Tyler Freeman and Gabriel Arias who are ready to at least do something right now. They're both on the roster. Tyler Freeman may or may not have fallen into a pit when he got called up and is missing, but he's technically there somewhere on the bench probably. And then you have Brian Rocchio who came up just as kind of like a spot bench start and went back down, but he's also hitting really well in AAA and he could come up. So Rosario's not the long-term solution anywhere. He's an average player at best on the offensive side of the ball. On defense, he's not. He's just kind of a clunker at shortstop. He's fine, probably. Probably not on a playoff team to start every day at shortstop. But this whole playing, the whole way they're playing this whole thing is just weird to me that they're not giving. Because even if you want Rosario to get more at-bats, just stick Arias at shortstop and make Rosario bounce around. I don't think his bat is going to be that much worse than sticking him every day at shortstop. And if Arias is bad offensively, you've got a really good, probably close to gold glove caliber shortstop, which you need at that position instead of putting your worst defender there every day. It's just bizarre to me the way they're doing it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, in the grander scheme, right? It's like, why? What is the goal of this team this year? Is it to make the playoffs? I think so. And from that perspective, I can understand wanting to keep Rosario in for reasons I don't agree with. But reasons that I understand from front office / managerial perspective of having a bat that you at least is a known quantity. I mean, it's not like he's the only person not hitting this year, right? No one is really hit. Every single player on the team is a below average hitter right now, except for just going by OPS plus real quick. Jose Ramirez and Stephen Kwan's at a 99 OPS. Josh Bell is again at a 99 OPS plus. Zunino was at 97. He really kind of fell into a toilet. Apparently, Jesus, he was really tearing the cover off the ball for a bit there. He's bad now also. So it's just, I understand from that perspective why they want to play him. But like you said, this is not a team that was like expecting to be where they are, where they got to last year. Then they're still in a sense building up, like you said, with Freeman, with Rocchio, with whoever else you want to throw in there. Arias, obviously, like there's so many other guys who should be getting, who could be getting chances, who could be good. And then on top of that, like I was just thinking about this today. Like going into the season, it seemed like things almost like I think we talked about this. The roster, like starting eight, seemed relatively locked for better or worse, right? It was just going to be Zunino, Naylor at first, Jimenez, Rosario, Ramirez, Kwan, Straw, Gonzalez, Bell DHing, swapping back and forth, right? Gonzalez was the biggest question mark because he just has so many issues with just being kind of a very fine line kind of a hitter. But it just seems like over the last month and change, so much more has been thrown up in the air where I don't have any confidence in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 positions maybe at this point. Like you said, I mean, Rosario's going to be gone at the end of the year. Bell may well leave at the end of the year as well. I'm pretty sure he can leave at the end of the year, right? Yeah, because it's an option. It's a mutual option. But then like, Naylor's not hitting at all, and he looked bad at the plate. Jimenez, I'm not worried about that because his defense is fine. But then of the holes I'm seeing at this point, it's Zunino, who we have an heir apparent. Naylor, which is just a big question mark regardless. Rosario, who we have 17 people that fill his role. And then Gonzalez, right? And then even Kwan. Like, I love, obviously I love Stephen Kwan. I've talked about it time and time and time again. But, like, this was a conversation we had last year. It's like, oh, he's so great at getting on base. And obviously it'll be great for him as he grows up and gets stronger. But he just hasn't really demonstrated any level of additional power compared to last year. If anything, he's showing slightly less based on rate numbers and things like rate sets and things like that. So His average exit velocity is up 0.2 miles per hour. His hard hit rate is up half a percentage point. So he's not really turning into what we were, I guess, we're hoping. Obviously, nothing's linear when it comes to growth with players, right? Like, there's always going to be hiccups and steps back and things of that nature. But I know this is way further afield than I think you were hoping to start this conversation.
No, that's exactly what the whole
thing
is.
But, like, that's the thing. Like yeah.
They it have all comes these young, together. It's all the same thing, basically.
Right. Like, they have all these players. Like, I'm fine with them, I guess, trying out Arias in right field, because at this point, that's a whole thing to them. It would be nicer, like you said, if this was something they wanted to do with Rosario. But again, I understand why the team might want to have him around for any sense of consistency he provides. But it's just like, he's bad. So I don't know. Like, he just hasn't been good at all. And like, what I think what's doubly frustrating is, you know, there's a lurking specter of that like 3 week stretch he's going to get on where he just hits like 450. And it's not all going to be like ringing doubles and home runs. It's going to be like you know, bullshit singles through the hole that someone misses and stuff like that too, where speed does help. But then all of a sudden he's hitting 280 and you're like, well, I guess we can just hold on to him. It's fine. But like, it's such a fool's gold.
And then you look at the end of the year and it's still like a 97 WRC plus overall.
Exactly. Like, that's MVP the thing.
For 2 weeks and then he just kind of evens out. But
like, he's a career 94 OPS plus. I mean, whatever number you want to use, right? Like, it's not, he's historically been a below average hitter. Last year he was just barely a shade over average, like 106 OPS plus. But like, I think more than any other number, it's the 312 on base percentage. It just drives me goddamn nuts. The fact that he walked 25 times in 153 games drives me crazy, because get on base. I don't know. Like, it's, I'm not going to sit here and say it's easy. It's incredibly hard. You know how many walks I've worked in playing, just in playing MLB The Show, a video game that's where I play on easy half the time when I'm hitting. I probably try to lay 7 walks a year. It's impossible.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but like you said, it's just they have all this young talent. And at this point, I don't care who it is. I'm not as much of a Freeman kind of truther as you are, but like Rokio and guys like that, like that's the thing. I just looked up. Rokio is hitting like 340 or something in Double A or Triple A rather. Like,
yeah, he has nothing left to do down there. He's just
339, 400, 488, and 135 plate appearances. He's walked 13 times and struck out 17. He's hit only one home run, but he's 15 extra base hits or whatever. Like,
yeah,
he's doing it. Yeah. So,
and somebody or multiple people actually brought up when I mentioned how confusing it is what they're doing. It might be just the fact that they don't see Arias as the future, and they're getting him in right field now to sort of keep him around when Freeman or Rokio come up. But then, like, on that same note, put Freeman or Rokio at shortstop. Then, like, I don't know what you do with Ahmed Rosario, but I think there are better options, or at the very least, I think Freeman and Rokio could hit as well as Ahmed Rosario is, but also have a ceiling somewhere. It's just weird to dedicate so much, I guess, mind space to a guy who's not going to be here for very long and who clearly is not going to, I mean, like you said, he could be an MVP for a couple of weeks, but he's not going to sustain it for a whole season. Like, you're going to have to figure out what you have ahead of time. It's almost
no
like
one does. I think that's, you know, we have to agree, right? That no one maintains. No, oh, just is a metronome, but like,
but his deep, peak, he's down the peaks so and far
valleys
down.
Yeah. Are crippling to a team. I mean, maybe if he was batting seventh, I wouldn't complain quite as much. And obviously, you know, we're not big on, you know, roster construction isn't that big a deal, or lineup construction isn't that big a deal, but like,
but when you're batting him second, you're kind of showing that like you're probably buying into him a little more than you probably should be. And even if his like, if his peaks were. You talked about a couple weeks ago, like you need an Oscar Gonzalez who peaks and hits really hard a few times. Like, that's not going to be Rosario. He's just going to have a bunch of singles. And like, if you can't do that the whole season, I don't know how valuable it is to get 40 singles in a short span instead of hitting a bunch of home runs. But
I mean, even last year, he had what, 10 home runs, even? Did he hit 11 home runs last year? He had almost as many triples as he had home runs. So, like, fun type of player. I just would like him to be able to get on base more than, you know, 30% of the time. Yeah, and then, I don't know, the thing about someone like Arias, too, is, like, he's such a hard read, because, like, you look at his career minor league numbers, his batting line's 269, 325, 410, but, like, he's 23 also, you know, like, it's not like we're talking about a guy who is fully formed or anything like that. He's...
Yeah, and I think that's also kind of by design. Like, they go after these guys who are really good for advanced age at their level. And I think where Arias has not been an impressive first showing for that tactic, I don't think. I guess maybe Noquan was older, but is there anybody so far that's come up like that? I guess Andres Jimenez has always been young, but like we've talked about for years, this is kind of what they're doing, is getting these guys who at every level are a lot younger than everybody else who they're playing against. I don't know what they see in that. I'm sure there's something to that, because it's clear they're targeting that, and that's kind of what Arias is now.
I mean, obviously, one side is obviously the cost thing. It's cheaper to get a kid from Venezuela than it is to draft someone, because you don't have to pay them as much, quite honestly. But even with, and he wasn't obviously someone they drafted, they traded for him from San Diego, who spends a lot of time, effort in the international kind of scouting, things like that too. But with Arias in particular, it's like he's still such an unknown quantity, because he has 106 plate appearances in the majors. Like it's such a low number. It's so crazy.
Yeah, it seems like he's been around for so long now, which has only been like a year, which is crazy.
I mean, and to say only 2000, I know obviously the minors are way different than they used to be, but like, you know, 2000 plate appearances in the minors is, 494 games is barely what 2.5 years of total play time. Like that's the thing too. He's never really had the opportunity to play consistently. I think in part because they have 10,000 shortstops in the minors, so it's like finding playing time for him. But again, maybe he sticks right field. But as my meatball kind of mentioned, he can hit the ball hard, and I think he has a decent sense of the plate and stuff like that. So I don't know what you do. But like you said, we have the same darn conversation we have every year. It seems like there's that logjam here. I don't know whether it's going to be Freeman or, like you said, Rocchio or what, but like the grander scheme is still that conversation of what is the goal of the team this year, and is it competing for a playoff spot? And to say they're out of it is bullcrap anyway. They're what, 3 games behind the Twins, and they just took 2 out of 3 from the Twins. In fact, the Twins are unbeatable or anything like that. Yeah, the Guardians can't get it their own way right now, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's part of it. They're just kind of still, like, they're always in this shadow rebuild kind of thing. I think last year they admitted like that everything came together faster than they thought. And maybe this was the more natural timeline. If they were like at 500 team last year, maybe this seems not quite as, I mean, they're still god awful, like last in the league, but maybe it's not quite as devastating. There's more understanding that they're rebuilding, but kind of a dumb analogy that comes to mind. Did you ever play Splendor, the board game?
No.
Man, it would have made way more sense. But there's, so it's like a game where you draft different colored gems to buy cards, which then count as currency to buy bigger cards. And it's like you just go back and forth and draft. Like, but the way you win and be good at it is you're always planning ahead, and like you have your short term goal that you're drafting for, because you can draft 2 pieces at once. So you kind of like always halfway draft for one down the road. And it's always kind of like what they're doing with that. Like they're never fully going in on anything. They're always just kind of spreading out. And which I think even before stuff kind of came together last year, that's what we acknowledged they were doing. Like they're never dumping all their prospects for one guy to go for it. I guess they almost sort of tried with Jonathan Lucroy, but as we've seen with the guys that were going there, that wasn't even that much of a dump. But they could have went all in and got like a Sean Murphy. I mean, we don't know that they could have this offseason, but the option was obviously there. Like there's stuff they can do, and maybe they will at this trade deadline. But right now it just looks like if they were playing Splendor, they're just drafting just to spread out and maybe pounce way down the road. But right now it's not quite coming together the way they probably hoped it would.
And that's what, you know, that churn kind of a thing, right, that we've gotten so used to. I mean, it's something that I think the Rays have really perfected. They just also happen to hit on a bunch of draftees and international signings that turned into super, like, absolute gods in their development process, as well as just a little bit better than Cleveland's. Forced, I think, on them in one part because they have to compete with like the most collective money in any single division in Major League Baseball, and thus, you know, probably American professional sports. I don't know though. Yeah, like you said, like just it does seem like they're just kind of like churning through guys. It makes you wonder. There's no end game, obviously. It's always trying to be competitive and seeing where it takes you, but it makes it hard to, I guess, identify an answer, if that makes sense. Like identify what is the ultimate solution, right? Like where is our Wander Franco or Randy or Rosarena or whatever the hell it might be? I don't know. What are they missing that other teams are seeing? Maybe we're just in a different cycle than a team like the Rays or whatever, but I hate drawing comparisons to the Rays anyway. They're different things. It's a different
thing. Yeah, they're a freaking nature organization. It's crazy.
I mean, you mentioned obviously like Rocchio doesn't have much left to prove in AAA. And again, maybe he does. That's the thing that I always wonder, because like you hear about older teams back in the day, like there was no real program that these guys had. Like, this is what you need to do to get to the majors or whatever. It was just like you kind of hope for the best, but teams are getting smarter about giving guys specific like growth plans and stuff. And maybe they do have a couple more like places that they want him to get to before they end up promoting him. But
yeah,
I don't know. I would like for a better player.
And as much as I always hate like the people who come in early in the season and say, relax, it's only a month of the season. Like, it still sucks to watch. But like, it is only a month of the season. Like if they do promote Naylor and Rocchio and they're both amazing, we'll look back at this time and not care, but it'll just be a silly laugh, haha. And they trade some for somebody at the deadline and maybe they get everything fixed, but it has been a fun couple weeks of baseball. So that whole discussion was supposed to be the downer of the podcast, followed by the happy conversation about Tanner Bibee, who through his first two games looked incredible, as especially that first game when he didn't have his fastball that game, which was kind of a little shaky, and now we've seen obviously today that they came back to bite him, but he got around it with a curveball, that big teardrop kind of curveball. He's got a slider that always confuses the hell out of Matt and Rick in the booth, which I think is hilarious. But he just has all these pitches that are just a ton of movement. We've seen like Logan Allen comes up and is impressive, but he's not like this overpowering kind of guy like Bibee can be.
I like him. He's left-handed, so shut up.
Oh, I love Logan Allen. Love Logan Allen, but he's not the kind of like, you don't see him a bunch on Pitching Ninja. I mean, he was there a couple times, but not for a 98-mile-per-hour fastball or a buckling curveball, but yeah, Bibee was great through his first two starts. I think he got his fastball back against the Yankees a little bit. And then today against the Tigers, he was big ol' stinky doo-doo, and he was not nearly as good. 3.2 innings, 4 in runs, 2 strikeouts, 4 walks. I think, like, at his best, we'll see one of these every few starts from Bibee. And, like, you sprinkle one of these in between 6, 7, 8, 9, a dozen great starts, and who cares? But I think he's just kind of a pitcher who, again, we talked about before, he's like the opposite of Logan Allen, has pinpoint mechanics. Tanner Bibee, some days he just won't have it, and he'll just kind of have these clunkers, and that's why not every pitcher is 2020 Shane Bieber, because they can't do it every single time they're out, and maybe this Bibee just needs one of these now and get out of his system. But overall, I think he's been a lot of fun to watch, and I just want him to stick in the rotation, for the love of God. I'm so sick of these guys coming up who are exciting, and then, I mean, I'm glad they're great relievers, but I want Bibee and Allen to stick in the rotation as well as they look so far. And even with Bibee's rough outing today, I'm excited to watch him further going more.
You look at his outing today in particular. Like, it wasn't, you know, obviously it's not good to get hit hard, and you get hit hard a bunch. But like even that third inning, that kind of was like the beginning of the end for him. Like it was a ground ball single, ground ball single, ground ball single to start the inning off. And it's like, yeah, that sucks, but like it's not like ringing doubles or dingers. Like, so a little bit of that is bad luck, right? Like you can't really control where the single goes, but you want to at least get it in the ground, like. That's the whole point of this team, is to have a good defense and everything like that. But after that, like you said, he had been excellent. I love watching him pitch. He's incredibly confident, like looked bullish against the Yankees. I mean, I like everything about everything I've seen so far. It's nice to have a high velocity arm in the starting rotation again. That's pretty cool.
I think the one thing to watch with him is that velocity, because he comes out like starting 96, 97. And even today, like by the third inning, he was down to like 93. That's kind of like,
yeah,
the one worrying thing. But if he,
you're gonna see that he's still relatively young and everything like that. And I think the other thing that I really liked is he's not leaning on the fastball. Like he's 46% fastball so far before tonight. I don't know.
It's gonna be a little bad, but I mean, yeah, it was straight up bad in that first game. He could not get it high at all. But he just worked around it and threw the slider and curveball more. That was the most impressive thing to me as a rookie coming up in his first start. And
well, then also he gave that home run up to, I think it was Willie Calhoun, maybe, when he was playing the Yankees.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, what the hell? But, like, absent that, like, he was really locating stuff really on the edge of the zone, too. Like, just good composure, good location, good mix of pitches. Like you said, that slide was kind of just goes boop. The curveball is nice, and you know, it's nice to see a changeup. Maybe a little more of that, please. But very, very encouraging to see him, and I don't want to just gloss over the fact that we have a good lefty potentially. As a left-handed man myself, it's just nice to be represented out there for once. It makes me feel good. Bibee's been also, I just love his name. Reminds me of the BB Bobby Bird.
I love that it's Bibee Bieber Battenfield for this series.
Oh, really yeah, the bees.
The killer bees.
Take that, the Yankees. Your stupid killer bees. Betances. Betancourt and who's the other? Benuelos. Manny Benuelos. Boy, the things that stick in your brain forever.
Yeah.
Man, he's great. I love it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun for a long time. I do love, I think about your action, you heard too how, like, every time Rick, every time there's a slider, Rick's like, I guess that was a slider. <It's> like, yeah, Rick, that's what they usually look like. That's why there's a sweeper now.
All right, whatever, buddy. Yeah.
He just cannot wrap his head around the fact that there's a pitch called a sweeper. It's hilarious every time. What do you say we answer some questions, man? Like I do every Monday, I ask on Twitter and Facebook for questions. And we got some this week. First one, PJ Barrett on Facebook. He asked, is Gabriel Arias Eric Gonzalez too? Which, a brutal comparison for poor Arias. But I don't think it's even... I get that the result might be the same. Like, maybe Arias will be traded or something. But I think there's a big... I think Eric Gonzalez is one of those guys. And that same year, to a lesser extent, like Eric's the Mets. I don't know if people thought he was going to be anything. But these are two guys, like... You kind of get overhyped for just because you watch him coming up through the minors, which I think is going to happen more going forward, especially that minor league baseball is on MLB TV now. Like, people are just going to stare at these prospects every day, and you just kind of tunnel vision on these guys. These guys must be good because I'm watching. Like, Greg Allen was another big one of that. I never really understood the hype around Greg Allen, but when he came up, it was he was hyped like crazy just because he's the guy in the Cleveland minors league system who came up, and obviously he's going to be good, and he wasn't. And Eric Gonzalez wasn't, and Eric Stamets wasn't, but I think, like, if Arias doesn't work out, it's different because he's kind of got he's been on some top prospects lists. He's got some scouts who had some promising things to say about him. If he flares out, it's actually kind of a falling short. I think Eric Gonzalez, not to be mean to Eric Gonzalez, but I think what he was basically just what he was. Like, he was going to be a replacement level guy for his career. And listen, if you can get and be a major league player for like 5 or 6 years, that's what most players are. Most people can't do that. Like, such a tiny percent of the population, but so that's not a terrible life to live that Eric Gonzalez has, but this is kind of what he was in the majors. It's kind of what he was always going to be. So I think if Arias flares out, he's not quite an Eric Gonzalez too, even if the result's the same. It's just, it's a different trajectory he was on that he didn't quite make that Gonzalez didn't have.
I just feel like Arias is more talented
than
Eric Gonzalez was.
That's a very long-winded way of saying the same thing. I think Gabriel Arias is way more talented than Gonzalez.
Yeah, Gonzalez, like, you look at his numbers, like, he has almost 4,000 plate appearances in the minors for a reason, right? In addition to another 880 in, you know, in non-major, like, foreign leagues. Like, that guy was never going to really be much of anything. I think we just saw his name for a long time because he was playing in, you know, Arizona ball at 19 and stuff like that. So, I don't... No, just straight up no. I don't. The thing is, like you were talking about before, I don't know what Gabriel Arias will be because I've only seen him 10 times, maybe. Like, I don't watch that much minor league ball that I don't actually go. Like, I don't watch on TV. If they're not coming, you know, to a place where I'm near, I'm not going to see them anytime soon. But I don't think so. I think obviously the ideal would be he is a starting shortstop for a long time. I think what we might end up seeing is because has a lot of like physical abilities, he might just be a super sub for a long time. But I think he'll stick around in the majors as long as Eric Gonzalez would. I don't know. Gonzalez might also have some other kind of intangible things around, you know, like we were talking about clubhouse stuff before, and he might just be a good guy to have around occasionally, just to be kind of someone who can, like, you know, what's his name? Like, Arias practicing in outfield could just be helpful for him for his career because he'll have had demonstrated that value. So I'm going to be saying, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, that's basically the answer.
Thanks for the question.
Yeah. At B. Vielhaber on Twitter asks, come the All-Star break, what will the rotation look like? Which I think this is a fun little mind exercise here because there's going to be a lot of pitchers. This is also... All-Star break is obviously before trade deadline, so they're not going to be pressed to do anything. Like, at this point, presumably, I think Plesac is donezo. He's still on the 40-man roster, man. He is buried. But then you're going to have Tristan McKenzie back, Aaron Civale back.
Oh, yeah, McKenzie.
Yeah, I mean, you got Bieber, McKenzie, Civale, Allen, Bybee.
And then you have...
Battenfield,
you have, I mean...
Quantrill,
you have the lurking specter of Gavin Williams, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, he could be, if he's looking good in AAA, he could be up by the All-Star break.
I would say the rotation will be in a particular order: Bieber, McKenzie, Quantrill, Allen, Bibee. I think the odd man out there is Savali.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's odd. I mean, I think that's kind of expected.
I don't think he's odd man at all. I just think he's very good.
That's true. Yeah. He's basically exactly
that's right. All. Which obviously, I'm not going to sit here and say Cal Quantrill is like shut down and like that, but like he's demonstrated a talent at getting outs, which is, you know, a thing, I think. It's a health thing, mainly, I think, with Savali. Have I seen him pitch this year? I have. 12 innings. Jesus, when?
It's a very short stint.
What the hell? I mean, it's going to
be tough to give him innings over like Bibee or Allen when.
Well, if they continue to perform as they have, like obviously throwing out today's start with Bibee, but like that's a growing pains thing. Like it's his third ever start facing. I don't care how bad they are; they're still major leaguers. Like yeah, there's guys on the Tigers who were wonderful in AAA, and you know who was in AAA like a week and a half ago was Tanner Bibee. So. Like that's the thing. These guys mashed, and then it's easier to if you're a quad A hitter to face a rookie pitcher, even if they're good, because they haven't really figured out what actually works. Like once he puts it together, then we're talking. But and there's gonna be some swing, you know, there's gonna be a swing man in there. I mean, I think that might bump someone like Xavier Curry out of you know the situation again, but.
I mean, he's definitely not getting the rotation now, which sucks. But
well, no, but like that's the thing. Like right now, he's just kind of. I think he is in a position where, if what I just described happens, he would be out of said position because Savali would be in that kind of swingman spot start kind of a thing, kind of a position. I'm trying to think of how if I were in the like, I don't know who puts together rotation. I don't know whether it is Francona or the front office, or I would hope it's a collaborative effort. I don't know how that conversation goes around. This guy is a vet. Like, yeah, but let's say, you know, Allen and Bibee are just, you know, pitching their balls off. I don't know. Yeah, so that, I guess that'd be my pick, though. Bieber, McKenzie, Quantrill, Bibee, and Allen. What do you say?
I think mine's the exact same. It's basically, I think maybe I'd have, like, either Bibee or Allen switched, but that's minor nothingness. I think you got the top five is right on. I mean, there's also obviously a chance one of them collapses. They're both rehabbing in Goodyear. So, I mean, it's still like, it's not like minor league pitch kind of rehabbing, but they're in Goodyear working out, getting ready to come back. So they'll be back sooner or later. I thought that was a fun little thought exercise. That's cause perfect timing to plan it because they're going to have so many coming up at that point. I mean, they'll be back before the All-Star break, but the decisions will have to come around then.
I know. Yeah. Them vision players as well. Thanks for the question. That was a good one.
Yeah. Last one, just I already know you're going to answer this one. I just wanted to ask you anyway. At JPK44 asks, what Guardians players on the Major League Club and in the minors would you be willing to include in the consolidation trade, and what position would you target for that kind of trade? Merritt, would you be willing to trade any prospects to
is this a real question? Let me just pull up the entire Columbus Clippers. No, wait, here's a better let's see. Guardians top prospects. Oh, good, I've already got it called up right here. I would trade the following people for a superstar: Daniel Espino, Gavin Williams, George Valera, Bo Naylor, Tanner Bibee, Brian Recchio. Not Chase DeLauder. I'm intrigued by him.
Is it his weird batting stance you're into?
I think it is.
Maybe it's just his baseball name.
JMU or something like that. He's a local boy. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, I like him.
he's the one you would leave. If the Angels come with Shohei Ohtani, like, we want Chase DeLauder. You say, no.
That's what? Not- him? He's got a purple helmet. No, I would trade every single one of these players for a superstar. Are you kidding me? Like, that's the whole point of them. I'm sorry. I've been bit in the ass too many times by prospects. And who would it be? Who's available? That's the real question, right?
Let's read every single player in the majors.
Let's see. Let's sort by OPS plus. Let's go to the top down. So to answer your question, I would trade anyone in a heartbeat because, A, I don't fall in love with prospects because they've stabbed me too many times. And B, I don't know much about them. So you know what? You know what I like? Major league players and home runs. So
that's totally fair. I think Gavin Williams would be like my only off-the-table one.
Just oh, my God. I'd trade him the first one. Pitchers? Are you kidding me? Get out of here. No, sir.
I mean, considering Daniel Espino right now is gone for a year.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
It is hard to imagine. I mean, I guess because it's the Guardians' plan is to keep all the prospects and keep the churn going. But as an outside fan, it's hard to imagine a team coming with a major league player who could, especially if it's under control. Like if you bring any Sean player Murphy. And say he's like Sean Murphy, who has several years, and they ask for literally anybody, you just, yeah. Sure, take him.
Hey, yeah, we have this 27-year-old guy who's worth 5.5 to 7 wins above replacement every single year. Yeah, whatever you dear, what do you got? Oh, yeah. And oh, we didn't mention he'll be under team control for the next 6 years. What?
Just take the whole Clippers organization. You can just what have the whole thing, stadium and all. It's a nice stadium.
I'm locking the door. You can't leave until you take something. Leave him.
Anyway, Merritt, I'll do it for us this week. If you haven't already, follow us on Cover the Corner, Twitter, coverthecorner.com. On Twitter, I'm Matt ROY. Merritt is at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. And Merritt, talk to you next week.
See ya.